Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 118, the Wargamer's Survival Guide to Kickstarter. I want to welcome all listeners, new and old alike. For those of you who are new listeners, this is how things work here at Wargaming Recon. We tend to talk about all sorts of different types of historical and New England gaming. Kickstarter isn't really something specifically related to New England gaming or even to wargaming, but it is something that is more prevalent that a lot of New England gamers and historical wargamers are using. I need to preface all of this by saying that, first of all, of course, I am not a lawyer. I'm not a legal expert. I'm not a business person or any sort of financial expert. What I'm going to share in this episode about how Kickstarter works and my experience with it, some suggestions for things to or to not do, they're just based off my personal experience and some research that I've done. But you shouldn't take it as Jonathan's the expert and he's going to tell you what to and what not to do. If you're really not sure about a situation, or maybe you've backed a Kickstarter and you have some questions or concerns about it, you should go and speak with a professional about it. You might need to speak with your bank. You might need to speak with a lawyer. Depends on how it is. And I know I'm making this sound like, oh, this is awful. Why would I want to do Kickstarter? So let me back up and say that Kickstarter can be amazing. But what is Kickstarter? Kickstarter is a way for bunches of people to get together and raise money for a particular project. The project can be many different things. Some people use Kickstarter or other places like it. There's Indiegogo, for example, is another website. But they use things like Kickstarter to, say, maybe make a movie. Zach Braff did that to help fund a film that he was doing. A lot of the time it's being used now is by game designers. And that's really why I want to talk about it in this episode. So what happens is that someone has an idea for something, some sort of project. It could be a thing they want to sell. It could be an idea. It could be to create some sort of art. And they need money for it. So they come up with this idea. They do their research on what they're going to do. And they go to Kickstarter and they put their project up. And Kickstarter reviews it and says, okay, this might be something of interest. In which case they allow the project to appear on the Kickstarter website. Or they can say, no, this is just ridiculous. What is that? And then they deny it. And you might have to work on it some more before you might hopefully get approval for it to go live on Kickstarter. And then once it goes live, it lasts for a predetermined amount of time on Kickstarter. Each project has a goal of how much money they need to raise to do whatever they want to do. So let's just go with the example of a game designer. Let's say you're an individual and you've had an idea to create an interesting variation of chess. You want to create this variation of chess. You're going to use cards to provide alternate modes of movement and attack and abilities to the chess pieces. So you want to be able to fund this, and you have someone lined up to do the artwork, you have a way lined up to distribute this and all that kind of stuff. But what you need is the capital. You need the money to get it going. You need someone to say, okay, here's this amount of money so you can pay all those people and make the product, maybe sell the product and so forth. And you say, I need $100,000 to do this. Well, hopefully enough people are looking on Kickstarter. And, of course, through word of mouth and social media and friends and all that kind of stuff, they're seeing your project and they're pledging money to it to help make it a reality. Why would they pledge money to a Kickstarter project? What do you get out of it? Well, that varies by project. So let's say that to encourage someone to pledge money or to be a backer of the Kickstarter project, the project creator, the game designer, is going to offer some special perks. They'll say, well, if you pledge $20, you'll get your name listed on the website for the game with my sincere thanks. They'll say, if you pledge $50, you'll get a free copy of the set of the deck of cards mailed to you, all of the cards that you can get. They'll say, if you pledge $200, we'll do something really cool. We'll make special game boards, chess boards, and you can get one of those, but it's only for people who pledge at this level. They'll say, if you pledge $5,000, maybe you'll get a t-shirt, you'll get a special board, you'll get your own chess set, plus all the stuff below it in the listing. And what's really cool is that the project creator can limit how many of each level is available. So say that really expensive level where you got like everything for, what did I say, $20,000 or whatever. They can say there's only one of those available. Or for the one with the chess boards, they can say, well, they only have the ability to get 5 chess boards made. So that's only for 5 backers. They can do things like that. It's cool because you and I can see that and go, oh, these are really cool things, and I think this project might be interesting, so I'll give money because I want to get that cool stuff. But on top of it, a lot of projects are doing things that are called stretch goals. Stretch goals are trying to encourage people to give more than what they need. So if a project needs $100,000 to make a game, they might say, well, if we raise $150,000, cumulatively, from everyone who's backing, we raise that, then we'll add an extra new chessboard piece, one you've never seen before. It replaces the pawns, it does something really cool, and that we'll add that to the project, and everyone who's pledged at X level and above gets this cool thing, or anyone who pledged below that can pledge an extra $10 to back it to get that. Or, you get what I mean, but they can have all these different stretch goals added on to encourage even more money. I've seen a lot of projects on Kickstarter get funded successfully, which is great, and a lot that have not. Ones that do get funded tend to get overfunded. And what that means is if they're looking for $100,000, maybe they get $110,000 or $150,000 because of those stretch goals. They give a timeline for when the things are going to be delivered to you, whether it's a physical product like the deck of cards or if it's a digital product, say like a PDF of the deck of cards. They say by X and X date, this is how it's going to happen. And they basically, in the project, they lay out a business plan, more or less, for how it's going to work. And they're not going to go into the same amount of detail as it would to, say, go to a bank or private investment firm or whatever to get the capital invested. They're not going to say X amount's going here, X amount's going there. Although, I think that's a wise decision. And if you see that, it could be something to help encourage you to think this is a reliable project. But what they're going to say is, well, we're going to do this here, and this might cost X amount to do shipping and this and that, and I've lined up this sort of stuff, and check out this really cool aspect, which I'm going to get from wherever. And they're basically trying to pitch you and say, not only is this going to happen, but this is how it's going to happen, why you should get involved. And then every Kickstarter project is supposed to have a section at the bottom. That section is supposed to list anticipated risks that could be involved with the project. So if there's a project saying they want to build, I'm coming up with something ridiculous. If they want to build a thermonuclear device. They want to build, some sort of crazy sci-fi thing, a Death Star. Well, they might say risk involved getting permits to build Death Star and being able to get space shuttles to fly up into orbit and to build the stuff there and that kind of stuff. Okay, that's a silly one. I understand. But something like that. Or maybe one of these Kickstarter projects is for a game, and a cool extra thing is that you can go to Waterloo with a great eminent historian who's going to walk around and who's an expert about Waterloo and explain everything, and that the trip's going to have happen at such and such a time. Well, a risk on that might be airlines have canceled flights, or if it's a cruise, the cruise might not happen, or there's weather or things like that sort of stuff. So they're supposed to lay out all that kind of stuff. Before you choose to back, you're supposed to look at everything and think, am I in a position that I can't afford to do it? Do I want to do it? Is it cool? Am I going to do it? And then you back or don't back. It uses Amazon payments for it, so you need to create an Amazon account if you don't have one already. And you pledge the money, but the money doesn't come out of your account until the project is successfully funded. And once that happens, the project creator gets all the money, and then they have to do whatever they said they were going to do. They have to make the cards. They have to send out the game and all that kind of stuff. On the Kickstarter website for each project, there are also sections where the project creator can do updates to say, hey, check out, we did this now, and then this is coming in. Next week, you're going to get whatever. And then there's another section for comments, where people who are backers and the project creator also can write comments and questions and all that sort of stuff. It's very, very cool and interesting model, and a really neat way to help bring some stuff to reality that otherwise might not see the light of day. Now, let me talk a little bit about my history with Kickstarter. I have to say, I have not backed many Kickstarter projects. In fact, I've only backed 3. Part of that is because I've been wary from the beginning days about Kickstarter and how it was going to work and what would happen. I'm someone who's cautious, both with my gaming. Anyone who's played a game against me knows that I tend to do a defensive game. If I were playing Warhammer Fantasy, I would play dwarves because I like to sit there. I like a good, strong defensive situation where I can turtle. If you put me in a fortress, that's great. Put me in a castle, you know, anything like that. I'm the kind of guy who's going to sit there, and I want you to come to me so I can shoot you or ambush you and get you in hand-to-hand, depending on what kind of time period we're talking about. I don't want to be running around willy-nilly to go chase after you. The same is true with things like Kickstarter when it comes to spending money and all that sort of stuff. I am more cautious. I'm going to wait and see how things are and try to research stuff before I expend any funds in that sort of method. So that's one of the reasons why I've only backed 3 Kickstarter projects. I'm going to go over the 3 that I have and do them from the first one I backed to the most recent one. So the first one I backed is a piece of software called Cityographer. It's by the wonderful guy who's created that other piece of software that I've mentioned here on the show, which is Hexographer. It's similar naming scheme. They do similar kind of things. Hexographer, I talked about previously, is a great thing that you can do if you want to do a campaign, whether it's a solo campaign or, you know, play by mail, or email, or just people getting together. That Hexographer allows you to create hex-based maps, and you can get really in-depth to do a battlefield. You can zoom out. You can do a country. You can do a state or anything like that. So they're really cool for that. And Cityographer is the same kind of thing, whereas Hexographer is for a geopolitical kind of situation like that. Cityographer is really to help you to create cities and towns. It has different icon packs, so you can do futuristic, you can do ancient, you can do modern, all that sort of stuff. I was familiar with Hexographer, and I loved what Inkwell Designs, the firm behind Hexographer, had done. You know, if Cityographer is going to be anything like Hexographer, I need to jump on this now, because what they were doing, they allowed you to get the software for less than what it would be afterwards if they had just successfully funded this or done this on their own and then were selling it through their website. And said, that's something I can't pass up. So I looked through the project and it seemed firm. I was familiar with the project creator because of what they had done with Hexographer. And in fact, the owner, Joe, he had given me a free copy of Hexographer so that I could review it, which I did. And as you know, if you had listened to that episode, I love Hexographer. It's fantastic. I highly recommend it to anyone for that. So I said, I'm going to take a chance on Cityographer. I'm going to make this my first Kickstarter project that I will back. I am happy that I have backed it. I have to say, I haven't used it as much as I expected I would, but partly that's my fault. It's just because I haven't been as focused on that. Now, there are some pros and cons with the Cityographer project. First of all, it was delivered very late. Version 1.0 did not come out until June 2014. It was supposed to come out October 2012. All along, versions of the software had been released, and you could use it beforehand. Don't get me wrong. You could use it back in October 2012 and since then, and there were updates and bug fixes, but version 1.0 was not released until June 2014, which is basically, what is that, 2 years, 2.5 years later? So that's, I mean, come on. That's so late. That's ridiculous. But like I said, you could use it beforehand. It wasn't a finished 1.0 version, but it was in beta and you could use it. It was stable and all that kind of stuff. There continue to be improvements to it. Joe always makes improvements as he has it, and you get free updates if you have it. Fantastic. Now, the pros, lots of open communication room, tons of updates to say what was going on, really quick replies to people who posted questions on the Kickstarter project website, or if you emailed him. It's a great company, really interesting software. So I'm happy that I was part of Cityographer. But like I said, it was delivered very, very late. And I'm harping on this for a reason, which you will see as I talk about some of the other Kickstarter projects. And basically, the reason is that late delivery is not unusual. In fact, I would say it is the norm. And if I could just digress for a second, for any of you who are listening who either already have been Kickstarter project creators or are thinking of making your own Kickstarter project, please, this is just something that I think you should take to heart that would serve you well with Kickstarter, but also with anything else in life, any other sort of business or anything else you do. If you're thinking it's going to take X amount of time to do something, if you're like, it'll take me 10 minutes to tie my shoes, I don't know why it's going to take you 10 minutes to tie your shoes, but if you think it'll take you 10 minutes to tie your shoes and someone's like, how long is it going to take you to tie your shoes? Don't tell them 10 minutes, tell them 15. And the reason why is that if you actually finish tying your shoes in 10 minutes, that person's going to be like, whoa, you were so fast, it got done super quick. And they're going to be excited and feel all warm and cuddly inside. But if you tell them 10 minutes and then it ends up taking you 15, they're going to be like, hey, what took you so long? And it'll be a negative response to them, a negative interaction, and that'll have negative imagery in their head. So if you're creating a Kickstarter project and you say it's going to take 6 months to deliver whatever it is you're doing, don't say 6 months. Say 9 months. In 9 months might seem long to people, but when you actually deliver it in 6 months, they're going to be ecstatic. They're going to love that you delivered it so quickly. Whereas if you say it's 6 months and it actually takes 9 months, you're going to have people moaning and complaining and whining and creating a fuss about it taking so long and why is it taking so long. And they might think that they will never, ever, ever back one of your Kickstarters again, and maybe never someone else's. So you have to really consider that. I've never created a Kickstarter project. Can't say that enough. But just from people who have, that I've spoken to, and things I've seen, it invariably will take much longer to get stuff done than you think it will. So overestimate how long it will take you to do something. And then you tell people that longer period. So if you're like, it'll take me a year to create this piece of software, but I'm going to tell them 6 months. Tell them the year. Because if you get it done in the year, they'll be happy. If it takes longer, they're not going to be happy. So just something to keep in mind. Now, the next project that I backed is another one that I talked about here on Wargaming Recon. And in fact, I talked about it so much, I ended up having the project creator here as a special guest to talk about the project. It was another one that I really enjoyed. Now, before I move forward, I should tell you that you might find it useful to check out the show notes for this episode right now, the one you're listening to. They are wargamingforums.com/WR118, wargamingforums.com/WR118. That web address will take you to the show notes, and the reason why you might want to make note of that is I'm going to cover a lot of stuff in this episode. I don't expect you to remember it all. You might be listening to this while you're at the gym or at work or during a commute. You're not going to be able to go and click on things or type stuff or email things or whatever while you're doing that kind of stuff. So if you remember the web address, it will have links to what we talk about. It'll have information. It'll tell you how to get in touch with me. All that really important stuff. So that, above all else, is what you really need to remember, that web address. Plus, it'll have links to like past episodes that I've talked about, things like the next Kickstarter project, which is Rogue Chess. Rogue Chess, a fantastic game. I alluded to it in my hypothetical example earlier. What it is that the project creator, Peter Blix Bryant, he's just an amazing guy. He has his own podcast. He came on and talked about the Mythwits, which is his podcast. He's a game designer. He's an industry guest at TotalCon here in Massachusetts. He's amazing, is really what I'm going to say. But he created this Kickstarter project because he was like, I like chess, but I want to make chess even cooler. So he came up with an idea to create cards that allow you to give your chess pieces alternate moves. And the cards have like different names on them. I don't happen to have mine right in front of me. But they allow you to move pieces in different ways. And some of them have special abilities and all that sort of stuff. So he wanted to create a Kickstarter, which he did, to create this project. He wanted to make it possible for people to get it. So here's some good and here's some bad. First of all, I backed it. I backed it at a level where I would get a deck of cards. The deck of cards came. They're gorgeous. I love them. They're fantastic. I haven't had a chance to play chess anytime soon, but I can't wait to use these. I also need to note, like I did in the episode when I first talked about Rogue Chess, that he had given me a free advanced review copy of, like, the beta version of it, just so I could see what was going on, and I was intrigued enough by that. Plus, I knew and know what kind of guy he is, respect the work he's done, and know that he creates incredible products. So because of all of that kind of stuff, I knew that I was going to back his Kickstarter. And I'm giving you the reasons why I'm backing these Kickstarters, because it's going to come to be important as I get further into the episode. So let's start with the good this time. The good is Rogue Chess is amazing. It's an interesting product. Like I said, I love the free promo copy that I had. The finished version is even better. Beautiful colors, great art design, really useful, and there was all sorts of extra perks, stretch goals, and that sort of stuff that was just amazing. Now, the bad was delivery was delayed by 5 months. Blix estimated that it would take X amount of time to get everything done, to get the decks made, to send them out, and all that sort of stuff. But unfortunately, it took longer, and this kind of stuff happens, and I'm not faulting him. I'm listing it as a con because it is. It's a negative. For someone else who doesn't have that connection to him like I do, they might be like, hey, this took 5 months. What the heck? I don't want to deal with this person ever again because he's just going to bring stuff late. And that's no good. But I assure you, this was his first Kickstarter project. And he's more prepared should he do anything in the future. But like anything in life, some things take longer. And if something's good, I personally don't mind waiting a little bit longer for a high quality product, as long as I know what's actually coming. So, for me, this 5 month negative, yeah, it's a long time. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's a long time. It's not like weeks. It's not even a month. 5 months. Long time. Was it worth it? Definitely. So, that's something to keep in mind. Now, the third product is something that I backed more recently, actually in 2014. It is the Ambient Soundscapes Volume 2 for Tabletop Gaming. This was a Kickstarter project that I had learned about as a result of Henry Hyde. He had backed the Volume 1, which had all sorts of really cool ambient sounds. If you've ever played a role-playing game, and you may not have, but if you ever played a role-playing game, some game masters like to have music in the background to set the mood for the game. So that way when you're in, like, say, a scary place, you're going to have scary music. And if you're in, like, a climactic scene, as it were, like from a film, if you're doing that, they're going to have that kind of music. Some people, like, I've done this myself when I've had people over and we played Black Powder and done Civil War gaming. I played, like, fife and drum music and that sort of stuff and Civil War sounds and songs and that sort of thing to kind of get us in the mood. So I like that kind of stuff. And not everyone does, but I really do. So the Soundscapes Volume 1 was definitely an RPG focused. And Soundscapes Volume 2, I saw the list of tracks. It sounded cool. And Henry had given his endorsement for the first one and said that he thought the second one was going to be awesome. And I listened to some of the first one and thought, this is really cool. And I thought the second volume would be good for some tabletop gaming. So I said, you know what, let me look into it a little bit more. I actually contacted the project creator and I was like, hey, I kind of like what you're doing. Is there any chance that I could get some sort of like preview copy of some of the stuff that you're working on for the second volume? Because at that point, I knew I wanted to talk about it on here on Wargaming Recon, which I did. And he very nicely sent me an email with a file attached of the, like, trailer, I guess you could call it, for Volume 2 that showed stuff that he'd done for Volume 1. And so he sent me the audio, and I loved it. And I put the audio in episode, put it up, and then I backed the project so that I could get both Volume 1 and Volume 2. Now, some good and some bad about this. Actually, do you know what? There's no bad about this project. This project was released incrementally. So as soon as it was funded, he immediately, every week, started releasing some of the tracks. He would work on them, release like one or two at a time. They were released in multiple formats, like MP3, FLAC, which is a lossless format. It's high quality. And then there were even some extras because stuff was had reached such a level. He then finished delivering everything 1 month before he said he would. So not only did we get a great product, not only was it high quality sounds, not only was the project creator amazing and incredible to deal with, but it came in early. That is just out of this world, because I tell you, from the people I've spoken to who have dealt a lot with Kickstarter, that never happens. You're lucky if something comes in on time, but 9 times out of 10, it's going to be late. So this was just amazing. Now let me talk about a couple Kickstarter projects that you should beware of. And think of these as life lessons, teachable moments, I guess one could call them, as things to look for and use as guidelines of projects to not back. And I shared my experience, which I would say are projects that would be worth backing. Even, you know, the first one, Cityographer, that version 1.0 came over 2 years late, but it was released incrementally so you could have it beforehand. But these two, one has a surprise ending, and one, I don't know what's going to happen with it, but they're not necessarily so great. So the first one is Torn Armor. You may be familiar what's going on with Torn Armor. I'm not going to go into depth on it, mainly because it was covered on the Meeples and Miniatures blog. There'll be a link in the show notes. You can go. But the lowdown is that this was a project that was going to create a game and minis and came into some difficulties where the company that the project creator had contracted with was not going to fulfill their terms of the agreement, and there was a he said, she said situation going on, and then it looked dead in the water. The backers were supposed to have received minis by November 2013, and by January 2014, like I said, the project creator said, hey, this is dead in the water. Nothing's ever going to come of this project. Well, let's fast forward a little bit. It turned out that made huge news all over the internet and blogosphere and all that kind of stuff, that this was dead in the water. It was all over social media. I know Neil Shook from Meeples and Miniatures put apologies up online because he had suggested people back this. He said it's going to be cool and you should back it and get cool stuff. So he felt terrible about it. I know there was a lot of discussion on the Meeples and Miniatures Facebook group about it. But then by March 5th, 2014, an update was put on the Kickstarter website by the project creator that said they had connected with Reaper Minis, yes, the people who make those incredible models, and that Reaper would be making the minis, and that the other parts of the game were going to be having offers reviewed and all that kind of stuff. And then by June 1st, 2014, the game is shipping out. It's roughly 14 plus months behind schedule, but it's actually coming out. So I was surprised by this, and pleasantly so, because I really thought it was dead and nothing good was ever going to come from it, and that we would never get the bottom story. And we may never get to peek behind the curtain on this. I'm not sure. But I'm happy about this because people who pledged for this, who backed the project, are actually going to get stuff at the levels that they backed for. So if someone backed to get, I don't know, a unit of models, they're going to get that unit of models. Whereas before, it looked like nothing was going to ever happen and people were going to be out of their money, and that was that. Because that was the other part of it. The money was already spent, and supposedly it could never be gotten back. I don't know all the details. Again, Meeples and Miniatures, you should check out. Now, the other project is more recent. It's actually ongoing as I record this in July 2014. Palladium Books had created a Robotech RPG Tactics Kickstarter project. They had a goal of $70,000. They raised $1.4 million. The project is over six months behind schedule. And now there's a controversy because they're just now getting to the point where they will be able to send stuff out to the backers. However, Gen Con is coming up. Gen Con is a gigantic gaming convention, if you don't know what it is, but I'm sure you do. So the project creator, who is like the head honcho of Palladium Books, wants to bring some of the Robotech RPG Tactics game stuff to Gen Con to sell, which would result in some people who go to Gen Con being able to buy it and have it before people who back Kickstarter, people who were supposed to get it over 6 months ago. So this has created some bad blood with people, and there's all sorts of comments on the Kickstarter website for this project where people are just unhappy and lots of stuff going on online. I'm not familiar with this, but apparently there's a long, long, long history of bad blood where Palladium Books says they're going to do something and something bad happens and it's someone else's fault and finger pointing and this and that and just all sorts of kind of stuff. I had seen some conversations on social media about this Kickstarter, and quite a few people had said, oh, I would have backed this, but then I saw it was from Palladium Books, so I knew not to because of whatever. The most recent situation going on with this is that the project creator from Palladium has put it to a vote on the Kickstarter website, which is something I've never seen done before. I'm sure it has, but I just haven't seen it. Where they want the backers to say whether or not they think it's okay for them to sell stuff at Gen Con. If enough people say no, then they won't. And if enough people say yes, or don't say anything at all, because it seems that they're taking silence as an affirmative, then they will sell it. So I think they're going to end up selling it at Kickstarter. I know a lot of, not at Kickstarter, at Gen Con, I'm sorry. A lot of people aren't happy about that. If I were in their position, I might feel differently, but I think it's actually a good thing. Everyone who has backed the project is going to get their stuff. It might take a little bit longer. The people at Palladium had said that part of the problem with this is that they didn't expect it to be as successful as it was. So it's going to take longer to send out all of the bundles of stuff that they can't send, you know, like 10 or 20,000 bundles in 1 week through the mail. They're not set up for that. So it's going to take them longer. So I can understand that, and I can also understand people's frustration because they're like, you raised $1.4 million. Why is this over 6 months behind schedule? Why don't I already have my stuff? And why will someone else get it before I, who gave you the money to make this possible? But here's why I think it could be a good thing. If they sell stuff at Gen Con, that'll get people potentially excited about the game. If people see the game, either from the booth or from people buying it and playing it and that sort of stuff, other people might get hyped about it. And if the hype is up there enough, they might say, hey, this looks really cool. I'm looking forward to this. I can't wait till someone near me has it. And maybe one of those people who says, I can't wait till someone near me has it, will be someone who lives near a Kickstarter backer who can then play the game with that person, who can then hype it and create a community around this game near where they live and grow the game and support it and all that kind of stuff. So I think if that were to happen, that could be a good thing. But like I said, if I were in any of these people's positions, I wouldn't be necessarily happy. And then I have one last Kickstarter project that I want to mention. It's really, really, really bad. It has nothing to do with gaming. There was a comic artist who burnt 127 copies of his book. He had this project where he wanted to take his webcomic and turn it into an actual like hardcover book, and people could get the book, and it took, I guess, forever. So people had asked about it. And he said that every single person who asked about the status of it, he would burn a book. He would burn their copy of the book. So apparently 127 people inquired, 127 people don't have their book because he burnt it. And not only did he burn it, but he took a video of it and then put it on the Kickstarter page. And then he took down his webcomic website. There's an article online, I'll have a link to it, but it's just absolutely ridiculous. And then Reddit has a list of Kickstarter projects that were successfully funded, but that have never gone anywhere. Basically, people lost their money. So like I said, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not someone who works with finances or whatever. But if you're in a situation where you backed a project and things didn't go well, you should immediately contact your credit card company if you paid with that, get a stop put on the funds if possible, try to get things back, talk to your bank and see what can happen with that, what they can do for you, maybe talk to your attorney general's office if you need to, or the Better Business Bureau, contact Kickstarter, all that kind of stuff. Now, I say that, but this doesn't mean that projects fail all the time, or rather that projects get funded but don't deliver. Because if that was happening all the time, no one would put anything up on Kickstarter and no one would back it. That's just how it is. But I have some just suggestions and guidelines for you to consider before you back a Kickstarter project. So the first one, and they're not in order of importance, but the first one is that you should have a clear idea of your expectations for the project. You need to determine if your expectation matches what the project creator is doing. Are you doing this because you just want to be a nice guy? Are you doing it because you firmly believe in the project? What's going to come out of the project? Number two, you need to communicate with the project creator before pledging. So if you have questions or you're unsure about how something's going to work or the delivery, or if you're just not sure, not completely sold by their pitch and what they have in the project there on the listing, contact them. Send them a message through Kickstarter, if they have an email address listed or whatever, just communicate with them and ask your questions. And if you get satisfactory answers and you feel all cozy and warm inside, go ahead and back it. If you don't, then just say thanks, but no thanks. Number three, only pledge when you know the project creator or their work or a respectable person who you trust vouches for the creator and or the project. So this is why I was harping on a couple things with the projects that I had backed. That with Cityographer, I had experience with the creator and liked what they had previously done. With Rogue Chess, that I know Blix and I know what he can do and how amazing he is and that he's a stand-up guy. And that with the ambient soundscapes, that Henry Hyde, a person who I trust and value their opinion on things, that he was like, this is fantastic and you should do it. I said, do you know what? I'll take a chance. And I did some research and I was very happy with that. So I think if you do this, you're more likely to have satisfaction. Whereas if you're just like, I don't know, this looks interesting, but I know nothing about this person. I don't know anything about what they've done before. I don't know how reliable they are, but I'm going to give you lots and lots of money. Probably a bad idea. Number four, you should closely examine the Kickstarter project. Does it seem too good to be true? Is it unreasonable or impossible? Here's an example of something that just seems too good to be true that people were given thousands of dollars per person for. There was an Indiegogo project, which is now defunct, thanks to yours truly, because I reported them. They were raising money for basically a thing that was a USB stick that you, quote, charged the internet into. And they claimed you were supposed to be able to put internet Wi-Fi capability into it by charging the internet into it. Then you could take that with you, plug it into a device like a laptop or whatever, and create your own hotspot that somehow or other you were going to create wireless internet out of thin air without anything that creates wireless internet. You can't do that. It's impossible. But yet people were giving thousands of dollars per person for this kind of thing. So just really pay close attention. And I know none of you would give thousands of dollars or any money for something like that that just seems too good to be true. But if it's too good to be true, it probably is. Here's one other example I wasn't going to give. There was a project that a person from here in Massachusetts was doing for modular terrain. He had these bases with magnetic changeouts for plugs and trees and boulders and stuff. The price point on it was so low for the pledging levels that you could pledge. It was like next to nothing, like a few $100. And you get tons and tons of modular trees and everything. Gorgeous looking, high quality terrain. So many people backed it because they knew it was such a good deal that it was the person underpriced what things should be, that the person ended up being too successful and a victim of their own success. And to my knowledge, this has never been successfully finished. Maybe it has, and I don't know. I know at least one of you who are listening know what project I'm talking about, and you could tell me if this actually ever got finished. And if it did, I'd love to hear what the status is of it, if you're aware of it. But to my knowledge, it never did, and I think it's because it was priced too low. So that's just something for a project creator to be mindful of. But if you see something, again, too good to be true, look, this is such too good of a deal, maybe you shouldn't back it. I know this sounds counterintuitive, but just maybe you should not do that. And then number five, pledge no more money than you can afford to lose, just like in gambling. So this way, if a project goes belly up and they've already got your money and there's no way you can get it back, you're not going to be hurting. Don't be backing at a level that's equivalent of like your mortgage payment or what you need for food or whatever if you can't afford to lose that, if you don't have extra money lying around. If you're like a billionaire and you can afford to lose like $500, hey, more power to you, but I cannot, and I think a lot of us probably could not. So that's just kind of something to keep in mind. And then this just kind of ties in a little bit with number one, the expectation thing. And that is, and this isn't a separate thing, but it's just kind of my thought about this. I really believe that there's a disconnect between the expectation of backers and the expectation of those who are creating the projects. It seems to me that many backers view a Kickstarter project as a store where they can just kind of go and buy products at a substantial discount and maybe get it before everyone else, and they're going to get this cool thing that's going to cost them next to nothing, and that they view that they're buying a product, just like taking something off the shelf and going up to the person at the register, the cashier, and saying, hey, I want this game and this is awesome, and walking out the store. Whereas I think some project creators view Kickstarter as a form of fiscal support to make their project, their dream, their idea a reality, that they do not view it as a store. I have to say, when I look at Kickstarter, I look at what the rewards are for the different backing levels, and I go, oh, this is really cool, maybe I'll do it because of that, not because it's a worthwhile project, but because I like the shiny thing that I could get if I back it at $50 or $100 or whatever. So, and then I have to say, hey, wait a second, Jonathan. Think about this. Don't get drawn in by the shiny object. So I do initially fall victim to, oh, it's a store where I can get stuff at a discount, when, in my opinion, it's not. And I don't think it's intended to be. But I do think people kind of view it that way. So just something to keep in mind about that. So I just wanted to mention that. And I'm going to recap what my five guidelines are. One, you should have a clear idea of your expectation and determine if it matches what the project creator is doing. Number two, you should communicate with the project creator before pledging. Number three, only pledge when you know the project creator, their work, or a respectable person who you trust vouches for the creator and the project. Number four, closely examine the Kickstarter project. Does it seem too good to be true? And then number five, pledge no more money than you can afford to lose. So those are my guidelines and my experiences with Kickstarter. Now, bottom line, Kickstarter, like anything in life, it has its good, it has its bad. There are risks involved with getting up in the morning and walking out your front door. That doesn't stop us from doing it, and I don't think you should be stopped from using Kickstarter. You just need to do your homework, and you need to look at stuff closely before you do anything. And I think if you use my five guidelines, you'll be pretty well all set. But of course, like I said, I'm not an expert, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not any of that kind of stuff. So if you're unsure, talk to a lawyer, talk to your bank people. And if you're in a bad situation with Kickstarter, you need to go to those places and talk to Kickstarter folks and see what's going on and see what can be done to resolve it for you. So moving on, I have the mailbag section of the show. So this deals with something I talked about last episode, and I got an email from Johnny. Johnny wrote an email about the Fall Tenian Succession compilation. He had said that he, you know, purchased it, but he didn't get the product yet. So he wanted to know about it and why it was taking so long and what would happen. And he also had said that, quote, "I've been intrigued since you first mentioned it over a year ago as separate articles, but I didn't want to buy all those issues. This is great," end quote. So Johnny has his compilation and he loves it, apparently. So Johnny, first of all, thank you so much for writing in. I really appreciate you taking the time to use our contact form to get in touch with me, to ask you questions and find out about this. And I'm even more excited that you are happy about this. Please know that, like my promise, donation will be made to combat stress. And I'm going to try to do it on a monthly basis like how Henry is doing. So what am I talking about? Henry Hyde, who is the editor of Miniature Wargames with Battle Games and the author of the Wargaming Compendium, is also the author of the Wars of the Fall Tenian Succession compilation. I talked about it in the last episode. You should buy it, first of all. It's like $5.99 American, 3.5 British pounds, something like that. But what Johnny was contacting me about is this. It seems that when you purchase the compilation from Henry, you're supposed to get two emails. One comes from PayPal. That's your PayPal confirmation saying that you paid for it or whatever. And then the second one is from Henry's eShop software that actually sends you the file and all that kind of stuff. Well, that second email, I guess, gets delayed because in order for that email to be sent, Henry's software has to get an automatic confirmation from PayPal. PayPal does it through its own. You don't have to make PayPal do it. They just do it on their own. But sometimes PayPal waits a while before they do it. I think he said on his website that it can be up to 4 days for PayPal to send it. So he tries to go in manually and push them through so that way you get the email with the file and everything. Sometimes he gets really busy. He's, you know, an author and he's an editor for a magazine and all that kind of stuff. Plus he has a life and everything. So he may not get to it as quickly as he would like. So if it's taking a little longer for you to get your compilation, don't worry, you will. It'll be coming. And just to recap why you should get it, it's fantastic, great, 35 page or so full color PDF with live links that let you go to navigate to different parts of the document, plus also external links that connect to places on the web where applicable. I'm in the foreword because I've been a huge fan of this all along, and I've kept on nudging Henry to do this. Henry's going to donate £1 from every single sale that will be donated to Combat Stress, which he's a firm supporter of. And then I am also going to make a donation to Combat Stress for every sale that I generate. Now, how does this work? Step one, you buy the Wars of the Fall Tenian Succession compilation. Step two, you tell me that you bought it because I mentioned it on the show. That's very important, because if you do step one but don't do step two, step three does not happen. And if you do step two without doing step one, well, I hope no one does that, because that would be a bad person. But then after you buy it, and then tell me that you bought it because I mentioned it on the show, I then, step three, make a donation to Combat Stress. So that way, Combat Stress is getting more money. It costs you nothing. Just my way of saying thanks and supporting a fantastic charity that helps veterans who are in need. So that has been this episode. I want to, of course, remind all of you that the next episode is going to be a great episode, of course, because it comes out August 4th with upcoming guest Henry Hyde. Ding-a-ding-ding. Who I said, of course, is the editor of Miniature Wargames Magazine and author of the Wargaming Compendium and author of the Wars of the Faultanian Succession compilation. He's one busy, busy person. So that does come out on August 4th, like I said. So you can look forward to hearing Henry talk about all sorts of stuff. We're going to have a really good time. I'm going to make a huge announcement in that episode. You really need to listen to that episode in its entirety to get the huge announcement. Trust me, you'll want to. And really, Henry's going to be gone, so there's no other reason to listen to the episode. You don't need to hear me talk. You're going to hear Henry talk, and he's fantastic. So that will be on August 4th. Don't forget, show notes for this episode can be found on the web at wargamingforums.com/WR118. That's wargamingforums.com/WR118. That'll have links to everything. It'll have information about stuff like our episode guide and all that kind of stuff. It'll also tell you how to get in touch with me. You can contact me on Facebook, where we have a strong presence. We're there all the time. wargamingforums.com/Facebook. We're on Twitter, wargamingforums.com/tweet. Not as frequently on there as I would like, but we are there. You can also send an email to cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. There's that contact form on the website that you can use. And we even have a phone number that you can leave voicemails on. In case you're someone who would rather do that sort of thing, you are more than welcome to. Not everyone likes to use it, and we don't really promote it as much as I probably should. But really, people just don't use it too often. But if you want to, you can leave a voicemail. Don't worry, it doesn't ring to my phone, so it's not going to disturb me in my sleep. It's 24/7. And if you leave a voicemail, you might hear your voice on Wargaming Recon or an upcoming episode. So that phone number is 347-470-4263. 347-470-GAME. So those are the ways you can reach me. But really, above all else, just remember that show note web address, wargamingforums.com/WR118. As always, I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. It's been a pleasure speaking with you this time. If I managed to skip over a project on Kickstarter that you know about, you love, or I maybe got something wrong, it happens. You know more about a project than I do, or you want to share a story or whatever, please contact me. I'd love to hear from you. It's a great reason to write an email or talk on Facebook and all that kind of stuff. I highly recommend it. So until next time, I know you're going to wait in anticipation for a Henry Hyde's episode, but no matter what you do, take a moment out of your busy, busy schedule, sit down, plot some time so that you can always, without a doubt, keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly. New episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Axis and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com. Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.